Chapter 10. No. They're in a place you don't know about, Zena answered darkly, with one of her secret looks. She went out of the kitchen and Maddie, rising, began to clear the dishes from the table. As she passed Ethan's chair, their eyes met and clung together desolately. The warm, still kitchen looked as peaceful as the night before. The cat had sprung to Zena's rocking chair, and the heat of the fire was beginning to draw out the faint, sharp scent of the geraniums. Ethan dragged himself wearily to his feet. I'll go out and take a look around, he said, going toward the passage to get his lantern. As he reached the door, he met Zena coming back into the room, her lips twitching with anger, a flush of excitement on her sallow face. The shawl had slipped from her shoulders, and was dragging at her downtrodden heels, and in her hands she carried the fragments of the red glass pickle dish. I'd like to know who done this, she said, looking sternly from Ethan to Maddie. There was no answer, and she continued in a trembling voice, I went to get those powders I'd put away in father's old spectacle case, top of the china closet, where I keep the things I set store by, so's folks can't meddle with them. Her voice broke, and two small tears hung on her lashless lids, and ran slowly down her cheeks. It takes the stepladder to get at the top shelf, and I put Aunt Philura Maple's pickle dish up there o' purpose when we was married, and it's never been down since, except for the spring cleaning, and then I always lifted it with my own hands, so's tea shouldn't get broke. She laid the fragments reverently on the table. I want to know who done this, she quavered. At the challenge, Ethan turned back into the room and faced her. I can tell you, then. The cat done it. The cat? That's what I said. She looked at him hard, and then turned her eyes to Maddie, who was carrying the dishpan to the table. I'd like to know how the cat got into my china closet, she said. Chasing mice, I guess, Ethan rejoined. There was a mouse round the kitchen all last evening. Zena continued to look from one to the other, then she emitted her small strange laugh. I knew the cat was a smart cat, she said in a high voice, but I didn't know he was smart enough to pick up the pieces of my pickle dish and lay a match to edge on the very shelf he knocked them off of. Maddie suddenly drew her arms out of the steaming water. It wasn't Ethan's fault, Zena. The cat did break the dish, but I got it down from the china closet, and I'm the one to blame for its getting broken. Zena stood beside the ruin of her treasure, stiffening into a stony image of resentment. You got down my pickle dish, what for? A bright flush flew to Maddie's cheeks. I wanted to make the supper table pretty, she said. You wanted to make the supper table pretty, and you waited till my back was turned, and took the thing I set most store by of anything I've got, and wouldn't never use it, not even when the minister come to dinner, or Aunt Martha Pierce come over from Bettsbridge. Zena paused with a gasp, as if terrified by her own evocation of the sacrilege. Why, you're a bad girl, Maddie Silver, and I always known it. It's the way your father begun, and I was warned of it when I took you, and I tried to keep my things where you couldn't get at them, and now you've took from me the one I cared for most of all. She broke off in a short spasm of sobs that passed and left her more than ever like a shape of stone. If I'd a listened to folks, you'd a gone before now, and this wouldn't a happened, she said. And gathering up the bits of broken glass, she went out of the room, as if she carried a dead body. When Ethan was called back to the farm by his father's illness, his mother gave him, for his own use, a small room behind the untenanted best parlor. Here he had nailed up shelves for his books, built himself a box sofa out of boards and a mattress, laid out his papers on a kitchen table, hung on the rough plaster wall an engraving of Abraham Lincoln, and a calendar with quotes from the poets, and tried, with these meager properties, to produce some likeness to the study of a minister who had been kind to him, and lent him books, when he was at Worcester. He still took refuge there in summer, but when Maddie came to live at the farm, he had to give her his stove, and consequently the room was uninhabitable for several months of the year. To this retreat he descended, as soon as the house was quiet, and Zena's steady breathing from the bed had assured him that there was to be no sequel to the scene in the kitchen. After Zena's departure, he and Maddie had stood speechless, neither seeking to approach the other. Then the girl had returned to her task of clearing up the kitchen for the night, and he had taken his lantern and gone on his usual round outside the house. The kitchen was empty when he came back to it, but his tobacco pouch and pipe had been laid on the table, and under them was a scrap of paper torn from the back of a seedsman's catalog, on which three words were written: colon, don't trouble, Ethan. Going into his cold dark study, he placed the lantern on the table, and, stooping to its light, read the message again and again. It was the first time that Maddie had ever written to him, and the possession of the paper gave him a strange new sense of her nearness. Yet it deepened his anguish by reminding him that henceforth they would have no other way of communicating with each other. For the life of her smile, the warmth of her voice, only cold paper and dead words. Confused motions of rebellion stormed in him. He was too young, too strong, too full of the sap of living, to submit so easily to the destruction of his hopes. Must he wear out all his years at the sight of a bitter, querulous woman? Other possibilities had been in him, possibilities sacrificed, one by one, to Zena's narrow-mindedness and ignorance. And what good had come of it? She was 100 times bitterer and more discontented than when he had married her. The one pleasure left her was to inflict pain on him. All the healthy instincts of self-defense rose up in him against such waste. He bundled himself into his old coonskin coat and lay down on the box sofa to think. Under his cheek he felt a hard object with strange protuberances. It was a cushion which Zena had made for him when they were engaged, the only piece of needlework he had ever seen her do. He flung it across the floor and propped his head against the wall. He knew a case of a man over the mountain, a young fellow of about his own age who had escaped from just such a life of misery by going west with the girl he cared for. His wife had divorced him, and he had married the girl and prospered. Ethan had seen the couple the summer before at Shad's Falls, where they had come to visit relatives. They had a little girl with fair curls, who wore a gold locket, and was dressed like a princess. The deserted wife had not done badly either. Her husband had given her the farm, and as he had managed to sell it, and with that and the alimony as he had started a lunchroom at Bettsbridge, and bloomed into activity and importance. Ethan was fired by the thought. Why should he not leave with Maddie the next day, instead of letting her go alone? He would hide his valise under the seat of the sleigh, and Zena would suspect nothing till she went upstairs for her afternoon nap, and found a letter on the bed. His impulses were still near the surface, and he sprang up, relit the lantern, and sat down at the table. He rummaged in the drawer for a sheet of paper, found one, and began to write. Zena, I've done all I could for you, and I don't see as it's been any use. I don't blame you, nor I don't blame myself. Maybe both of us will do better separate. I'm going to try my luck west, and you can sell the farm and mill, and keep the money. His pen paused on the word, which brought home to him the relentless conditions of his lot. If he gave the farm and mill to Zena, what would be left him to start his own life with? Once in the West, he was sure of picking up work he would not have feared to try his chance alone. But with Maddie depending on him, the case was different. And what of Zena's fate? Farm and mill were mortgaged to the limit of their value, and even if she found a purchaser in itself an unlikely chance, it was doubtful if she could clear $1,000 on the sale. Meanwhile, how could she keep the farm going? It was only by incessant labor and personal supervision that Ethan drew a meager living from his land, and his wife, even if she were in better health than she imagined, could never carry such a burden alone. Well, she could go back to her people then, and see what they would do for her. It was the fate she was forcing on Maddie, why not let her try it herself? By the time S.E. had discovered his whereabouts, and brought suit for divorce, he would probably, wherever he was, be earning enough to pay her a sufficient alimony. And the alternative was to let Maddie go forth alone, with far less hope of ultimate provision. He had scattered the contents of the table drawer in his search for a sheet of paper, and as he took up his pen his eye fell on an old copy of the Bettsbridge Eagle. The advertising sheet was folded uppermost, and he read the seductive words colon trips to the west. Reduced rates. He drew the lantern nearer, and eagerly scanned the fares. Then the paper fell from his hand, and he pushed aside his unfinished letter. A moment ago he had wondered what he and Maddie were to live on when they reached the West. Now he saw that he had not even the money to take her there. Borrowing was out of the question. 6 months before he had given his only security to raise funds for necessary repairs to the mill, and he knew that without security, no one at Starkfield would lend him $10. The inexorable facts closed in on him like prison warders handcuffing a convict. There was no way out, none. He was a prisoner for life, and now his one ray of light was to be extinguished. He crept back heavily to the sofa, stretching himself out with limbs so leaden that he felt as if they would never move again. Tears rose in his throat and slowly burned their way to his lids. As he lay there, the window pane that faced him, growing gradually lighter, inlit upon the darkness a square of moon-suffused sky. A crooked tree branch crossed it, a branch of the apple tree under which, on summer evenings, he had sometimes found Maddie sitting when he came up from the mill. Slowly the rim of the rainy vapors caught fire and burned away, and a pure moon swung into the blue. Ethan, rising on his elbow, watched the landscape whiten and shape itself under the sculpture of the moon. This was the night on which he was to have taken Maddie coasting, and there hung the lamp to light them. He looked out at the slopes bathed in luster, the silver-edged darkness of the woods, the spectral purple of the hills against the sky, and it seemed as though all the beauty of the night had been poured out to mock his wretchedness. He fell asleep, and when he woke the chill of the winter dawn was in the room. He felt cold, and stiff and hungry, and ashamed of being hungry. He rubbed his eyes, and went to the window. A red sun stood over the gray rim of the fields, behind trees that looked black and brittle. He said to himself, colon, this is Matt's last day, and tried to think what the place would be without her. As he stood there he heard a step behind him and she entered. Oh, Ethan, were you here all night? She looked so small and pinched, in her poor dress, with the red scarf wound about her, and the cold light turning her paleness sallow, that Ethan stood before her without speaking. You must be frozen, she went on, fixing lusterless eyes on him. He drew a step nearer. How did you know I was here? Because I heard you go downstairs again, after I went to bed, and I listened all night, and you didn't come up. All his tenderness rushed to his lips. He looked at her and said, I'll come right along and make up the kitchen fire. They went back to the kitchen, and he fetched the coal and kindlings, and cleared out the stove for her, while she brought in the milk, and the cold remains of the meat pie. When warmth began to radiate from the stove, and the first ray of sunlight lay on the kitchen floor, Ethan's dark thoughts melted in the mellower air. The sight of Maddie going about her work as he had seen her on so many mornings made it seem impossible that she should ever cease to be a part of the scene. He said to himself that he had doubtless exaggerated the significance of Zena's threats, and that she too, with the return of daylight, would come to a saner mood. He went up to Maddie as she bent above the stove, and laid his hand on her arm. I don't want you should trouble either, he said, looking down into her eyes with a smile. She flushed up warmly, and whispered back, colon, no, Ethan, I ain't going to trouble. I guess things'll straighten out, he added. There was no answer, but a quick throb of her lids, and he went on. She ain't said anything this morning? No. I haven't seen her yet. Don't you take any notice when you do. With this injunction he left her, and went out to the cow barn. He saw Jotham Powell walking up the hill through the morning mist, and the familiar sight added to his growing conviction of security. As the two men were clearing out the stalls, Jotham rested on his pitchfork to say, "Colin Daniel Burns going over to the flats today noon, and he see apostrophe D take Maddie's trunk along, and make it easier riding when I take her over in the sleigh." Ethan looked at him blankly, and he continued, "Colin, Mrs. Frome said the new girl'd be at the flats at 5, and I was to take Maddie then, so's t she could catch the 6 o'clock train for Stamford." Ethan felt the blood drumming in his temples. He had to wait a moment before he could find voice to say, "Colin, oh, it ain't so sure about Maddie's going, that so?" said Jotham indifferently, and they went on with their work. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.